From the bright lights of the stage to the bright glare of the courtroom, Lord of the Dance legend Michael Flatley is no stranger to controversy. But in recent years, his legal battles have multiplied. High-profile cases over his Cork mansion, disputes with former solicitors and insurance companies, and court battles over control of his iconic show have kept both lawyers and journalists busy.
My father, he was a fighter from County Sligo. If he was alive, God rest him, he would have been very proud. So I guess there is a little bit of a fighter in me, and I you have to rely on that at times like this.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. 3 years ago, Michael Flatley was diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer. He moved to Monaco. He said he focused on his health and he said he trusted others to manage his financial and legal affairs. Fast forward, and he's fought allegations of financial mismanagement, disputes over 30 million euro in renovations at his stately home, Castle Hyde, and a court battle for control of Lord of the Dance. Today on the podcast, the twists and turns of Michael Flatley's legal battles. Well, our guide through this legal maze is Francesca Cumman, the legal editor at The Currency. Francesca, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Ciara.
And there are twists and turns, right? We are going to do a deep dive today. We're trying to get into the weeds without leaving people utterly bamboozled by what is going on here, because it is complicated, but it is fascinating. What a web.
This is a maze. I mean, up until about 2023, Michael Flatley's name didn't really pop up on court lists. Now it's just been a barrage. It's literally one battle after another, and it's multi-jurisdictional as well. I mean, most of the arguments are basically taking place in the High Court in Dublin or the High Court in Belfast. But there is, as you say, it's a web. It's a web of characters, of advisors, of loans, financial arrangements, disputes. And of course, at the centre of it, like, Michael Flatley is a bona fide star. And what's kind of kicked off the latest bout is this 30-year anniversary tour of Lord of the Dance, that mega show he put together in 1996 after there was a bit of a fallout from Riverdance. This is really turned into a battle for the ages.
And you mentioned Riverdance in 1994, and I feel like Riverdance is absolutely etched so clearly in my mind. Like, I can't remember what I did 20 minutes ago, but I can still see Jerry Ryan introducing Riverdance. I can still see Michael Flatley bombing out on stage with that turquoise billowing blouse, dancing, and I can still hear, I can recall it so clearly, the cheer, the way the crowd exploded when Riverdance finished. I mean, he just changed the face of our traditional dance globally.
Oh, he literally burst into the scene. I mean, he wasn't a young man at that stage either. He was in his 30s, which is not particularly young if you're a dancer. And, you know, he's American, obviously. He's born in Detroit, but he grew up in Chicago, Irish emigrant parents. His mother was a set dancer. He himself began Irish dancing when he was about 11. He's also into boxing, I think, as well. And, you know, Riverdance was this huge turning point. Obviously, he was incredible. The amount of taps he could do, you know, his legs, his body was insured for enormous sums of money. The Riverdance thing, there were kind of a bit of a falling out with the producers. He then went on to have enormous success with Lord of the Dance and then Feet of Flames. And as you said, like, he's an Irish citizen. He has a passport. He has lived in Ireland, but these days he's mostly based in Monaco.
Okay, so I suppose we should start with the eponymous show, with Lord of the Dance, which, as you say, he developed into his own stage show. He is the Lord of the Dance, and it premiered here in Dublin in 1996. It's celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. There is still huge demand for this show globally, and he had planned this big celebration of that anniversary at the Three Arena here in Dublin in February to coincide with where the show was launched to great acclaim 30 years ago. What happened?
I mean, these comeback shows, no surprise to anyone, they're big business. I saw one figure being put on it that the tour with well over 200 dates, it's called a world tour, but it's kind of Europe and North America essentially. Like, we're looking about maybe 11.8 million in the offing. So it's big business. And It was, as you said, the great fanfare. It was going to launch in the Three Arena in Dublin. And then, boom, just on the cusp of this big comeback, you know, with all these dates in the bag, the company staging the show announced it was going to be called off with immediate effect.
And this company is called Switzer Consulting Limited, and we're going to hear a lot about them in a moment.
We are indeed. Basically, it just put out this statement, you know, huge disappointment to the fans, but also that big money at stake. But it just came out. It said, we're the company that, you know, is running the show. It blamed an ongoing commercial and legal dispute concerning the show, the operation of the show, which couldn't be resolved in the time frame available. And that row was with Michael Flatley. Basically, what was at stake is they were trying to block him. And the words that were used was stop him from hijacking the show and stop him being in any way involved with that show.
So a lot of people will be wondering, why wasn't Michael Flatley involved with the show?
He's the choreographer, it's his show. But basically, they had gone up to the High Court in Belfast and they had secured an injunction to block him having any involvement. Now, it was a temporary injunction. It's the kind of thing you can go into court and get for a time until the other party can kind of put their case together and present arguments to the High Court. Ultimately, Michael Flatley, he said he was outraged by this attempt to shut down the show in Dublin, and he managed to secure a different order that would allow the show go on.
And to go up to, I suppose, that injunction in Belfast, there were some pretty explosive allegations made against Michael Flatley as to the motivation, I suppose, for Switzer Consulting to ensure that he didn't, as they said, hijack the show.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Switzer Consulting, they were alleging a breach of contract. They said they'd signed a deal with Michael Flatley in July 2024 and that deal allowed it to run the show. And they said Flatley was now interfering. They said this was problematic because of the way Flatley did his business. They were kind of saying that he was bad with money. And they said, you know, they argued, obviously highly contested, that he consistently stripped the business of money to support his own personal lifestyle, that he was contacting promoters like Peter Aiken and other promoters overseas and asking them to divert deposit money instead of going to Switzer to send it to him directly and telling suppliers that we're taking over the shows. And they were saying that, you know, he had no right to do that, that they were running it and that this was interfering with their interests.
And Flatley, as you say, completely contested this. He said these claims were a smear campaign, that it was a character assassination, and he did actually get his own injunction, and the show in Dublin ultimately went ahead by the very skin of its teeth.
These were not flattering allegations that were being put forward by music promoter Joe Gallagher of Switzer. I mean, they were very personal. There were allegations that Flatley maintained a facade of wealth and using other people's money, and that he was faking it on a multi-million euro scale, that he borrowed 75,000 for his birthday party and 50,000 to join a Monaco yacht club. Switzer basically argued it had taken a hold of the show in 2024 and put it back on a sound footing.
And who had they taken the show from?
Yeah, it's complicated stuff, but prior to the involvement of Switzer, Flatley and a man called Philip Morris of music services group Cutting Edge, they'd formed a partnership to run Lord of the Dance, and that was back in 2019. And then last January, the Belfast court was told that Morris was owed over 3 million by Flatley, and he was to be repaid from the royalties of the show. But Morris hadn't got the money he was due. Apparently, he had only got around 500,000 or so, it was alleged. And they fell out. So in 2024, that led to Switzer's appointment. And they basically took over Morris's interest. And apparently they sold its share in this joint venture to Switzer for a nominal sum. Now, Flatley, he has disputed claims from Switzer and accountant Des Walsh, who was his former agent, that he transferred all his intellectual property rights to the company. Now, that was valued at 158 million. Huge money. For the sum of 1 euro in return for a loan from a UK businessman called Bruce McInnes.
Okay, now the show, as I said, went ahead in Dublin, but the court ordered that the stage set and the costumes, which appear to have been in the control of Switzers. They were to be made available to Flatley and the crew by 5 p.m. on the day before the show. And in return, Flatley had pledged not to destroy, damage or tamper with any of the equipment while in his possessions. And the set and the costumes were to be made available for collection and in the same condition by midday on the day after the performance. OK, so we got control for Dublin. But then we had this situation in Zagreb. There was a show there. 20,000 tickets had been sold. There was to be over 700,000 in gross earnings there. And Switzer Consulting said, we're actually in control of this particular show. So again, not quite sure who had the ultimate ownership of this big tour and of Lord of the Dance.
There's been a whole new series of developments. I mean, the battle rolls on. The court more recently has heard allegations of a standoff in Croatia over a live show with involvement from Switzer, and also this unauthorised St. Patrick's Day performance in London.
OK.
The court has most recently heard that he's hired a private detective to investigate spiralling loans, apparently worth millions of euro, that have hit the company. So I suppose we'll hear more about that in the coming weeks.
Then there was this absolutely fascinating checkmate moment, I think, when it comes to this whole dispute. And that is the role of Maurice Regan and Luke Comer, who have come out of nowhere, it appears, and rode in to rescue Michael Flatley and Lord of the Dance in some way by purchasing the music rights to Lord of the Dance. Tell us about this.
Yeah, that was pretty recently on, what, March 25th, a company called Shawdale Holdings Limited. Now, that's jointly owned by Maurice Regan, the construction magnate based in the US, but what, Kerry Bourne, and Luke Comer, the billionaire property developer and probably known for his horse interests, equine interests. And they acquired all the rights and interests previously held by Cutting Edge Group Limited in the show. And they essentially settled the bill with Morris, the figure we're speaking about, who he fell out with in 2024.
And now that they have ownership of the music, you would think of Lord of the Dance, obviously the show can't go on without permission to use that music. And they're aligned with Michael Flatley, aren't they? There's a friendship there.
Precisely. I mean, essentially, it's a win for Michael Flatley. He's back in the driving seat.
Okay, and just to remind people at home, we did a long edition of News Talk Daily about Maurice Regan and the property dispute that he had with the racing giant John Magnier last year that ended up in the courts that he ultimately won. So if you think his name is familiar, that is why. And you can go back and listen to that episode of News Talk Daily if you want to get up to date on that particular legal case. Okay, so as it stands, are there still legal disputes here in relation to Lord of the Dance?
I think it's probably fair to say we're going to go into a new stage of the dispute. The Lord of the Dance, the tour is secure. Michael Flatley is back in charge. But there are still issues with his dealings with Switzer Consulting. And I think there's probably still a way to travel before that all gets resolved.
Let's move on now, because his other big legal battle, which I think people will have got confused over because this has been in and out of the court and in and out of the court and in and out of the court, is the issues that have arisen from Castlehyde, which is Michael Flatley's stately home in County Cork. Now, for our listeners, what can you tell us about Castlehyde House and the work, I suppose, that Michael Flatley and his wife, Niamh, have carried out on that home?
Yeah, Michael Flatley famously bought this palatial country house near Fermoy. It's on the banks of the Blackwater. Back in 1999, he flew over it in a helicopter and fell in love with it and said he had to have it. So he bought it for around £3 million back then. And it was, you know, he was at the height of his fame, but the house was in dire need of a bit of love. So he pumped about another £30 million into renovating the place. And I think he deserves huge credit for that.
That's a lot of love.
It's a lot of love. It's an historic build. It dates back to the kind of late 18th, early 19th century. And it's the ancestral home of Ireland's first president, Douglas Hyde. And, you know, it was very dilapidated when he took it on. The kind of Rococo stylings and reported safari room with African rhino horns and the like may not be to everybody's taste. But, you know, it's a great act of love.
And he has apparently pumped another 10 to 20 million furnishing it with artwork and antiques and rhino horns, as you talk about there. And I think a lot of us will have seen those pictures and spreads of VIP magazine over the years. I mean, it is ornate, it is luxurious.
Okay. Absolutely. And he has, I mean, there's a checkered history in the sense that he tried to sell it in 2015 with a guide price of around 20 million. That didn't work out. By 2018, the asking price was down to 12.5 million. again, no sale. It has been his home for a long time, but there are definitely indicators there that he was maybe looking to move on from it.
So there was a fire in the house on the night of June the 18th, 2016, and there was extensive damage done. And after that, following that fire, he took legal action against several companies who'd been involved in the restoration of his home. Tell us about those proceedings.
Potentially a suspected electrical fault. But anyway, he claimed contractors he'd hired to carry out works were negligent and they didn't implement proper fire safety measures when doing the work on the house. And he also claimed there were issues with the property's plumbing system, that it was incorrectly designed and that this resulted in the flooding of the basement. It's on the banks of the Blackwater, so that when the river rises, it was affected. So he sued a London-based architect, Peter Inston, and interior designer, Sean R. McCarthy, and various engineering parties who had done the works. And they all denied negligence, and ultimately the proceedings were settled and the case was struck out, and no details of the settlement or anything emerged, as is typical.
Okay, so we don't know what happened there, but there were further proceedings then the following year, because Michael Flatley again claimed that the remediation works that had been carried out on the house after that fire, that they themselves were actually defective. Back to court we go.
That's right. Flatley, he launched this battle in late 2023, seeking up to $30 million, and he was citing a surveyor's report. He was suing contractors who'd been appointed via his insurers, and basically he said as a result of these works that after the fire, there was unsafe levels of chloride residue, that it was no longer safe for him and his family to live in the property, and that they had been forced to move out in 2023. So the main renovation contractor on that was Austin Newport Group Limited, and basically said that, you know, they had failed to address the issue. All contested. It's been going on a long time. There were also proceedings against his broker, David Cushion, but that ultimately he is now out of the proceedings.
Okay, and as you say, all of the allegations are denied, but there's a really interesting aspect to this case, which is security for costs, right? And for listeners at home, basically, if you're going to take an action against somebody, right, you're the plaintiff, like Michael Flatley is here, not on every occasion, but in some occasions, the court will say, look, if you fail in your action here, can you guarantee the court that you can pay the other side's, the defendant's, legal costs? Because if they incur costs of tens of thousands or millions of euro, they're going to be completely out of pocket. It's not fair. Can you guarantee us that you can cover those costs? And in this case, in the commercial court, the justice said, look, Michael Flatley, you don't have enough equity in Castlehyde to fund this legal action. And the money involved is huge. I mean, it gives you just a sense, I suppose, of how costly it is to be in and out of the High Courts.
Yeah, I mean, basically, as you explained, a security for costs order is to ensure the defendants won't be left out of pocket if they win. That can be a fatal blow to a case if the plaintiff can't pay up the money up front. But, you know, these applications, they can only be made in very specific circumstances. Like, number one, the person suing has to be living outside Ireland, probably even the EU, because it's all about whether you can recover costs, you know, if you successfully defend the action. So if they're outside the jurisdiction, and more importantly, their assets are outside the jurisdiction, it's going to be a lot harder to recover your money, to recover your costs. Now, Flatley lives all over the place. You know, he's houses in all sorts of places. I know Paris has been mentioned, and Spain. But he argued that he's resident in Ireland. But for the point of this proceedings, the judge found that he was ordinarily resident in Monaco, and that this was even before he said he had to leave Castlehyde in 2023.
So he's disputed this 2.8 million security requested. That's what they estimate the legal costs of defending this case are, and he's disputing that.
Initially, the defendants, parties like Lloyds, they were satisfied that Castlehyde was a valuable asset, and that if there was any issue, they would be able to enforce costs against Castlehyde, because there'd been a valuation that it was at 20 million. But then in separate proceedings before the High Court, you know, one of the valuations put Castlehyde at 8.5 million, another at 10.5 million, and it's encumbered. In these other proceedings, Comer and Regan once again got involved. They lent him about 7 million. And then if you do the maths on that, that meant the equity on Castlehyde, you know, might be 2 to 3 million thereabouts. That may not be enough to cover the costs in a legal dispute like that. So ultimately, the judge ordered Flatley to stump up $1.1 million to progress the Castlehyde claim. That's now under appeal, though.
Okay, eye-watering sums of money, and interesting to hear that Maurice Regan and Luke Comer are involved in that again. I mean, what phenomenal friends to have. Francesca, have you any billionaire friends
there
handy?
In the background, no.
Great
no.
guys to be able to call on. Okay, so that's that dispute, and it's ongoing. That clearly hasn't been settled yet. Now to our, I think, final legal dispute, one of the most recent legal actions, and this is Michael Flatley's dispute with his former solicitor, Maxwell Mooney and Company. What's the core of that case?
This is interesting because, as I was saying to you, you know, up until quite recently, Michael Flatley, not really before the courts, but since 2023, in the cases that have been in Dublin, the Novellis kind of lending proceedings, you know, that was a battle he had from the fallout of his film Blackbird, bit of a vanity project, wasn't a huge financial success. There were some problems there with the lender, and the same law firm were always there. It was Maxwell Mooney and Co. They were all over Flatley's legal tribulations. And like, this is not a corporate law firm. It's a small Kildare practice. And, you know, when all these proceedings, Max Mooney himself would be sitting at the top of the court acting for Michael Flatley in the Castlehyde proceedings, but also, as I say, when he was suing lender Novellis. That relationship came to an abrupt end late last year. The firm came off record for Flatley, and it's clearly not an amicable split. In February, he issued proceedings against Max Mooney, and they're in dispute about legal fees. And Flatley claims that Mooney and Co. are holding on to his litigation files, and he's trying to get a release of that hold because he says it's impeding the Castlehyde dispute from progressing.
Okay, and Maxwell Mooney's office claimed that there is a generally an overall of Flatley's files because there's outstanding fees. So, okay, so these are the arguments and the counter-arguments, and that is playing its way through the courts too.
Mediation. It's a mediation hearing is due, and if that doesn't work out later this month, then the court has scheduled a half-day hearing.
Okay, right.
Interestingly, just one
last
thing.
Oh, there's
more. Well, Flatley's new legal team is led by barrister Niall Buckley, and he's instructed by Barry Creed. And if that sounds at all familiar, he defended the Thompson Moores in the Barn Estate row when they were being sued by Bloodstock billionaire. Again, a Maurice Regan connection there.
That is a lot of legal actions, like both in your private life and your professional life. And so many of the relationship that he's encountered, it's really unusual, I think, to see an Irish-based entertainer face this level of legal entanglement. I mean, we've property litigation there, really high value. You've got insurance claims and counterclaims, commercial disputes involving tens of millions. This is really rare, actually.
It is. It happens on occasion. It does kind of give off the appearance that he's firefighting. He's fighting on every side. Certainly, there's been a lot of lending. He's denied allegations that he's been living beyond his means and, you know, claims of extravagant spending. I did mention there the film Blackbird. Obviously, he took a bit of a financial hit on that. There were repercussions.
So there was a whiskey brand.
There was a whiskey brand. And like in some of the court cases, particularly the Novellis one, he was putting forward that he was a man of means, but they were the courts would find that they weren't always backed up by sufficient documentation. So that painted a portrait of someone kind of really fighting a fight. The ship has steadied a lot with the proceedings in Belfast really going his way so far anyway. Unquestionably, though, it's a big burden to be carrying all those legal actions. They don't come cheap. You know, in something like Castlehyde, you're against very big players. So he's a lot on his hands, and he's also had bad health in recent years. So this can't be easy.
Well, thank you so much, Francesca Cumman, for taking us through the complicated web that is the legal woes of the Lord of the Dance star, Michael Flatley. Follow Francesca's extensive reporting on this and many other legal trials at thecurrency.news. That's it from News Talk Daily. Remember, you'll find us on the Go Loud Player and all of the usual streaming platforms. Give us a like or follow to make sure you never miss an episode. For now, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.